and welcome to episode 8 of Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. This month's edition is purely focused on the Awin Report, our annual definitive guide to the global affiliate industry, which we recently published and which is now available for download from the Awin site. A little later, I'll be talking to two of the primary contributors to the report when I interview Chris Johnson from Groupon and then also Sean Mayen from the digital agency Equator about their respective thought leader articles that feature within the report this year. And Kevin will also be having a conversation with Vicky Bruce from The Telegraph and Simon Bird from Revlifter, who feature in the UK market chapter about the state of affiliate marketing right now. For now, though, I think it's worth us explaining a little more about what the Awin Report is and the theme of this year's edition, which is focused around the channel's digital diversity. Now, the Awin Report, Kev, was something that you really wanted to get off the ground a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. So we launched the first version of the Awin Report back in 2017, which we then refreshed in 2018. I think that it sort of coincided with us rebranding from Affiliate Window and Zanox. It's part of the rebrand as Awin. We wanted to sort of create this global brand, this global message around affiliate marketing. And so what we chose to focus on with the first Awin Report, which was this idea that regardless of where you were in the world, you could pick the Awin Report up and find commonalities within it. So what we focused on is the stuff that binds us together, the stuff that connects us. And we felt that that was a really good launch pad for the initial and then follow-up Awin Report.
Yeah, and I think that we really decided to kind of flip that on its head a little bit this year for 2019's edition. So rather than it being a very network-centric focused piece of content where the articles that were primarily being written by myself and you and that we were providing that perspective from an affiliate network on what affiliate marketing looked like across the globe, actually it was really time to kind of emphasize the channel's diversity, because a network is ultimately only ever as good as the businesses that it helps to connect. And what made more sense to us right now was to provide a platform for all of those businesses and different partners of all different shapes and sizes to have an opportunity to give their opinion on where affiliate marketing sits right now, how it's evolved over time, what it looks like in all of those different markets. So in this year's edition, we've included a whole host of interviews for each of those local markets, asking agencies, advertisers, publishers, third-party tech providers, legislation experts, local trade bodies, and a host of other kind of different businesses and organizations what they think of affiliate marketing and where it sits within the digital ad industry. And I think that that's particularly important right now as well, because obviously the ad industry in general is something that is increasingly being dominated by too few players, arguably. You have the digital duopoly with Google and Facebook hoovering up all of that online ad spend in particular markets, the US and UK particularly. And actually, whilst those platforms have been very effective in helping brands to connect with consumers around the world, there's a degree to which that is quite a precarious investment from a lot of advertisers as far as their ad budgets are concerned, and those ad budgets are being concentrated in a small selection of partners. And affiliate marketing really helps to diversify that by connecting businesses with brands across an array of different ad models, and in a way that means that they can keep control of their ad spend and have a real sense of transparency around where they're being promoted, how they're connecting with consumers, and how they're engaging the right kinds of audience.
Yeah, yeah. And to add to that as well, I suppose you talk around the diversification of affiliates. This year, we've seen that duopoly kind of come under more and more scrutiny, which you know, isn't necessarily great for advertisers that spend their money on there. And I suppose the affiliate industry offers an alternative to that. We've seen the likes of, you know, Facebook with the Cambridge Analytica scandal. You had you know, numerous cases of Facebook facilitating things like hate speech and data law scrutiny as well. And then, of course, with Google, with its fines for kind of competition complaints and things like that, that's further put, you know, those two major players into the spotlight. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that kind of allows, and this report kind of explains it quite well, it kind of allows the affiliate industry to kind of shine out in that regard. Often criticized for kind of in the past for being not transparent. Actually, affiliates offers much more transparency in the modern day.
Yeah, and I think that what we've managed to kind of secure within this year's report is a huge amount of different case studies. So we've looked at how affiliate marketing is working for a lot of these brands across sectors, across regions and markets, and across all different types of business models as well, whether it be cashback, voucher code, editorial content, influencers. So all of these case studies, excuse me, tend to kind of really emphasize and showcase the strength of the channel in terms of connecting brands with consumers in a wide array and varied manner.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously want everybody to read it within the industry. It doesn't matter sort of what corner of the industry you come from, but we know that brands always ask for interesting content, unique content, different content, and we also know that brands really like hearing what other brands have been doing. So for me, some of the highlights are definitely within some of those case studies. Also, and as you mentioned, you're going to be talking to Chris later. He specifically references some really creative uses of the channel within his section as well.
I'm here with Sean Mahon, who is the affiliate team leader at the UK agency Equator, and he was kind enough to contribute one of our thought leader articles to this year's Aaron report. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
Thanks for dropping in today.
No problem.
Your article offered an agency perspective on the affiliate channel and sought to provide some context around where it sits within the wider digital mix. Do you think the channel has historically struggled at an agency level to make itself heard amongst other, maybe more prominent or competing channels?
Yeah, a little bit. I think, you mean, a lot of kind of digital marketing budgets kind of break down to where the biggest spend is going. And kind of traditionally, in my experience, agency side, you tend to see a lot of money will go into kind of PPC and display. So sometimes kind of affiliate marketing can be overlooked purely because of that, as well with the kind of cost per acquisition model sometimes. You know, it isn't evidently clear, you know, when we're kind of splitting up budgets, just how much is going towards affiliates. But I mean, I don't think kind of in this day and age that we have much issue getting it across. I think, you know, the kind of only pay for the sales you make model still kind of holds a lot of truth today with our clients. And we tend to get a lot of kind of business off the back of that simple, that kind of simple thing. So, yeah, I don't think we kind of struggle to get it across, but definitely I think, you know, in the past, you know, clients can almost come to us sometimes and they already have an idea of how much money they want to put to Google and how much money they want to put into their display campaign. So that can make it kind of tough sometimes to kind of have your voice heard. But yeah, luckily enough, I've got a loud enough voice. So yeah, there's no issues there.
Yeah, so I mean, you actually talk a little bit from your firsthand experiences, obviously, as being involved with the affiliate channel at Equator. And you talk a little bit about how Equator evolved their structure and of their service to combat this notion of different digital channels operating in silo. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I just going back to the point I made there about kind of clients almost come to us sometimes with ideas of how channels are split. I think we all had to kind of take a little bit of a step back from that, because ultimately it really doesn't benefit anyone if you kind of have a shopping list of channels you want to engage with and then it doesn't work out the way you plan. You're not really left with much of an option. So I think at an agency level, what we tried to do is kind of realign our strategy a little bit and kind of pull back and kind of listen more to what clients wanted, you know, trying to understand what their KPIs were and then kind of coming up with solutions around that, not necessarily channel focused, but more solution focused. And a lot of that came down to how we kind of split out the teams from the traditional kind of silo channel structures. You know, we kind of grouped the SEO and PPC teams together into search. I mean, that's a fairly kind of straightforward one. But then one of the more interesting kind of joining of teams was my team, the affiliate team, with the outreach team who traditionally sat within SEO, but forming the kind of idea more around partnerships. So not necessarily focusing on the cost model or how we went about it, but just kind of getting clients on board with the idea that this was the team that would look after all your kind of external partnerships. And I think, you know, so far that's worked really well, as opposed to kind of having clients in the mindset that the affiliate team does X. It's now just kind of really understanding how the channels kind of benefit each other and how when we work together, we can kind of, you know, achieve kind of business aims, not just kind of channel led results.
And I mean, do you think there are any other obstacles at all that the channel, the affiliate channel still faces in terms of advertisers really understanding the overall value that they're benefiting from those partners that they have?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, education is a huge thing. I think, you know, there's still, unfortunately, to this day, there's a little bit of misconception that, you know, affiliate marketing is simply just cashback and voucher codes. Even if you just look at those type of affiliates themselves, how much they've evolved their offering over the years, you know, the kind of penetration we can get now into different markets. markets, into different audiences, just by aligning with these kind of mega brands, you know, your kind of your household names when it comes to cashback and voucher code sites. I mean, that's just the starting point. And then you go deeper again into the type of content we can do, the kind of partnerships we can build, pooling our resources, like I said, with the outreach team at Equator. And it really is just about kind of making clients aware of the kind of scope of our ability to kind of, you know, work with websites on their behalf, and kind of just, like I said, more of an education piece than anything, I think.
And so looking forward into the future, do you see the affiliate channel status changing within the wider digital ad industry over the next few years?
I mean, I'm noticing a lot in the kind of industry press and stuff, there's a kind of a tendency to try and kind of almost get away from the name affiliate marketing, which I think is a bit of a shame, because I think what we've accomplished in a relatively short amount of time, you know, across the board as a channel is nothing short of spectacular. So kind of repackaging it as kind of, you know, different names, I've heard it just kind of thrown around and trying to get away from this idea of what makes affiliate marketing tick. I wouldn't be in favor of that. So I think, you know, there's always kind of tendencies to try and repackage things and whatever, but I think the core offering of affiliate marketing, I don't think will change much. If anything, I just think, you know, clients will start to kind of sit up and take notice a bit more of just kind of what we are capable of in the year 2019 with the amount of kind of tools at our disposal and also the kind of partnerships that we can build on their behalf.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for that, Sean. And if you want to hear more about Sean's opinions and perspective from the agency level in terms of what the channel is doing right now, then I definitely recommend checking out his article within the report itself. Yeah, thanks again for that contribution and for dropping in today.
No worries.
So I'm here with Vicky and Simon. I'm going to get the guys to briefly introduce themselves before we have a little bit of a chat about the affiliate industry and the state of the industry today. So Vicky, did you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Vicky Bruce and I'm the head of affiliates at The Telegraph.
My name is Simon Bird. I'm one of the co-founders of RevLifter, but I've been in the industry for some time now. I used to work at Savu and prior to that Affiliate Window as well.
Okay. So thanks both for being here today. Obviously, we're primarily talking about the AWIN report today, and one of the key themes of that is digital diversity. And you both, I think it's fair to say, represent growing areas of the affiliate industry. So why for you is this an interesting time, and why is it the right time for your businesses to kind of be flourishing? Simon, did you want to go first?
Great. I mean, I think the whole affiliate channel is evolving all the time. And I think what a lot of people forget is the affiliate channel is more than just connecting publishers with retailers. I think the affiliate channel is also a payment mechanism. Obviously, we work on a CPA. But I think there's a real opportunity for, certainly in our case, technology publishers, as there are a few of them now, to use the commission CPA model as a rail to get into retailers and install technology and get paid on a performance basis.
Vicky?
So I think we're in a really interesting position. Content, I think, has always been kind of seen as a bit of a holy grail in affiliate marketing, but sometimes quite difficult to get right. And perhaps there's not always been the appetite from publishers to produce content within an affiliate model. But I think over the last few years, we've seen a lot of publishers, newspapers and media houses wanting to diversify their revenues a little bit. You know, print subscriptions are declining across the board. And I think people don't want to be too reliant on display. I think that's sensible. And across the board, I think affiliates now being seen as a good way to diversify that revenue and get money from elsewhere.
So you say, you raise an interesting point about diversification there, which obviously comes back to one of the central themes in the AWIN report. One of the things that we really feel very strongly about is that kind of affiliates acts as a kind of a bit of an antidote to the duopoly, Google and Facebook. But that's very much our kind of perception from the inside looking out. How would you say that when you're talking to brands about your services, what would you say, how would you say the industry is perceived by them?
Shall I take this one first?
Sure.
I think honest answer is from the people who are making the decision at the brands, it's still not seen as that antidote that we're perhaps looking at positioning it as. It's often regarded, I think a lot of people at the top don't necessarily understand the channel very well, which is still a problem. That's been the case for several years now. And I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done to kind of push that position forward to say this channel with investment can drive you lots of volume if it's looked after in the right way.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges of affiliate marketing is that a lot of retailers still view the affiliate channel as a bit of a business as usual channel or a set and forget one. And I think, what I hear from a number of retailers is they'll often recruit people into their business, and then the affiliates is often where a person might start in as a retailer, and they kind of get moved around the business. And I think, to Vicky's point before, I think it's an excellent point that we should be trying to get in front of CMOs and be seen more as a strategic channel that can be used for long-term planning, but also react to short-term advertiser goals. So I think there's a real opportunity for that.
So how do you currently do that then? Because you're obviously experiencing kind of really rapid growth. You're obviously saying stuff to brands that is really resonating with them. So what are the kind of key messages that you're saying that is really sort of getting their attention?
Yeah. So at Revlifter, we are involved in real-time personalized deals. And when we go and speak to affiliate managers, I guess the opportunity and challenge in the same breath is that we would speak to an affiliate manager and say, look, what are your marketing goals? And often you get met with revenue or, more short-term goals. But you can kind of unpack that a bit and say, well, perhaps you want to increase your average order value or increase your conversion rates or whatever it may be. But because Revlifter is essentially acting on behalf of the retailer and effectively being a publisher on a retailer's own website, you often get sponsored in by the affiliate manager to other departments of an online retailer or omnichannel retailer, such as the head of SEO or paid search or even on-site merchandising people. So often an affiliate manager for us is a first point of call, and then we get sponsored into the rest of the organization. But when you do finally sit in front of a CMO, you can have a strategic conversation about their long-term goals and what they're trying to achieve as a brand from a holistic point of view. And let's not forget that the affiliate channel is one of many channels, and it takes, a CMO is interested in how the affiliate channel harmonizes with all the other channels, and that's where you have the conversation around attribution and how one channel affects and enhances another channel and the whole kind of, the top to bottom down funnel of a user journey.
Vicky, any thoughts from your perspective?
I would say, I think in terms of the attribution side of things and where advertisers are placing their idea of value, I think, and I mentioned this in my response in the report as well, it's a constant source of amusement to me that advertisers are kind of sometimes always complaining about the lack of innovation in the channel and how innovation always happens towards the bottom of the funnel and perhaps viewing that in a negative way, which I don't agree that it is. Because we are paying on a last click CPA model, of course that's where innovation is going to happen. There's no such thing as one incremental sale, right? Mm-hmm. There's a million and one different publishers within the affiliate channel, within other channels that all contribute to each sale. So if you're going to focus your time on contributing to one particular type of sale, of course we're going to focus on the ones at the bottom of the funnel. And I don't think that constitutes as being like of lower value. So I don't know. It's something that I always kind of have a bit of a laugh about. It's not something that's going to change realistically. I don't foresee that changing anytime soon. I think we just have to accept that innovation is going to happen towards where the sale happens and where the point of that happens. And I think that's a good thing for where we are at the moment. And perhaps in the future, the payment model will change or user journeys will change and that will cause a bit of a shift. But for the time being, I just don't see it happening. Probably
yeah, I think that it kind of happens in pockets. So there's certain sectors, I think. So if you take telco or services, where I think that sort of price comparison sites have done a pretty good job of going in and kind of selling a kind of whole range of services. Perhaps retail's got a little bit of catching up to do in that score.
Yeah, potentially.
So, Vicky, another point that you touch on in the Q&A section of the AWIN report, which is, I think, very often ignored, and I think dovetails quite neatly, actually, Simon, into your business model, is that advertisers kind of run an affiliate program, they throw it out there and they just assume that they're going to get sales.
Yeah.
And actually they ignore a lot of the kind of fundamental, the nuts and bolts of their own business and things like usability and conversion rate optimization and things like that. I think that there's a really interesting point in the affiliate industry at the moment, because there's a growing need for kind of tech solutions beyond what we would consider to be traditional publishers. So is that, Simon, I'm guessing you're going to say yes, but I'm assuming that's kind of resonating when you're going out and talking to brands.
Yeah, of course. There's a huge level of interest from retailers looking for performance marketing technology solutions, and you know we're one of many out there at the minute. There are technology solutions. So, for example, one of my favorites is what increasingly is doing with Sri's doing yeah. with product recommendation. I think one of the things that I've noticed over my, over the 14 years of being involved in affiliates is sometimes the consumer is forgotten, ironically. I think a lot of the conversations we have are very much sort of B2B, but you often forget that actually there's a consumer that has a level of intent, touching things online and making decisions and reacting to things. And that's where I want to spend my time, and I implore the rest of the industry to spend their time. And I think personalization in itself is becoming a big thing right across the web. And, Amazon famously has spent a lot of time in that area. And I think personalization is something that, we're bringing to the affiliate channel, and so are others. And I think it's where we should all be spending our time. And basically our message to everyone considering someone like Revlifter is, we're able to show the right deal to the right customer at the right time based on who the consumer is and what they're about to buy. But, there are lots of, micro situations where a consumer is considering something. And I think that's kind of, sharing data amongst ourselves is a really important thing.
Yeah, I always think that we often forget that we're all consumers in our own right as well. So yeah. We only kind of have to look at our own behavior and what we like and don't like to kind of, that's a pretty good starting point.
Yeah.
So we're sort of coming to the end now, but I just wanted to ask you one last question, which is based around kind of how your general sense of feeling for the channel at the moment. I think that generally there's actually quite a lot of positivity around at the moment. As industry veterans, you both worked at affiliate in various different guises for a number of years now, kind of experiencing all the kind of highs and lows. How optimistic are you about where we are and also, I suppose, where we're going? Vicky?
Okay, I'll take that. So I think at the moment, I haven't witnessed myself over the last year or so any huge changes in the general makeup of the industry, but I am optimistic about where that's going in the future. I think one of the most exciting things we have in front of us that I'd say the entire commerce industry has in front of it is the way user journeys are changing. I pulled up a couple of really interesting stats yesterday. I think it's now 20% of all mobile searches happen through voice. And it will happen at some point that's going to start to transpire into commerce. It already is. Alexa, order me some dishwasher tablets. Sorry to anyone who's listening that's got an Alexa on. everyone's going to be getting dishwasher tablets. All of this, all 12 of them. No. So that's going to transpire into commerce really soon. I think sooner than we anticipate. And that's going to be a really interesting opportunity for us here as people who are focusing at the end of the funnel. How can we start to make that better for people and make that experience easier for people? That's when it's going to start to get really exciting. And I don't think it's going to be too long. I think it's going to be quite cool.
Yeah, and from my point of view, I think there are a few headwinds we need to face before we as you face those, there's a big opportunity to grow. And I think some of the headwinds, that one of the biggest ones we're also challenged by is incrementality. So proving every time that an affiliate drives a sale or value that you otherwise wouldn't have got yourself. And I think there's a real opportunity data sharing to help prove some of those things out. So I think there's a big opportunity there. But for me, I think one of the biggest opportunities, as Vicky mentioned, so the user journeys are often more challenging and more disparate and they're forever changing. But I think there's a massive opportunity for online to offline. So if you think about sales in the UK, 20% of sales, are done online and 80% of sales are done offline. And I think as retailers become more sophisticated and they can track a consumer going from online to offline, I think there's a massive opportunity there to bring those offline experiences into the affiliate space. So I think that's a massive opportunity. I think there's also another opportunity to bring on fast-moving consumer goods companies to the affiliate channel as well. I think there are companies out there like Coca-Cola or Unilever or others that should be eyeing off and embracing the channel. So I think I'm really excited about that as well, amongst other things.
Yeah, FMCG certainly is a bit of a holy grail within the channel. So yeah. Hopefully some of those brands are listening. Yeah, so that's all we've got time for. So just want to say thanks very much to Vicky and Simon for joining us today.
Cool. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ken.
So I'm joined now by Chris Johnson, Groupon's Client Services Director, who provided one of our thought leader articles for this year's Avon report. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
Good, thank you. Thanks for coming in today.
No worries.
So you focused on the art and importance of storytelling in affiliate marketing in your article.
Yes. Why
did you decide to draw attention to that particular aspect of the industry?
For me, I think having been immersed in this lovely industry for many years now, I think over the years we've seen, a lot of businesses come and go. We've seen a lot of businesses really take center stage within the industry. And I think one of the areas where it lacked was the ability for us to do what we see agencies do very well. And it's things like Cannes Lion, mm-hmm. festivals and, creative videos and all these other creative assets and angles that people take in order to work more closely with brands. And I just don't think generally it's something that the industry and the affiliate industry in particular has ever really excelled at. We do it in small doses, and there are some very clever businesses involved in that. But overall, I think there could be a lot to be learnt from us being more like these agencies and pitching ourselves and the clever things that we do within the industry to the wider marketing mix.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us any working examples of the campaigns or the kinds of campaigns that you've been involved in or witnessed where that aspect of storytelling has really played quite a pivotal role?
Yeah, there's always a good one that I like to talk about, which was, it's quite funny how it came around. We saw some really strong spikes in traffic for a particular Saturday night in May, and it was quite consistent year on year. And actually, we started to dig into trying to understand really why our food to go brands, our takeaway and so on, brands really outperformed what our expectations were. And really couldn't pinpoint exactly why it was doing so well. And it turned out to be, once we've done a bit of digging, that it was the Eurovision Song Contest,
yeah.
Which, I don't know if you know it.
I'm aware.
Yeah, I'm with you on that camp as well. But unfortunately, a lot of people do watch it. It's about 7-8 million UK viewers, I think, last time I checked. And actually, it was a day where, the weather was on our side. People were sat in watching Eurovision and ordering takeaways. And like, there's a big complementarity angle to that.
Yeah.
You know, when you're sitting in watching telly or playing on games, and you're not leaving, so let's so actually it came for us to then I guess approach some of our bigger food to go partners and say, look, we've got a really interesting date lined up next year in May. Told them what it was. Obviously they couldn't quite believe it either, but they'd seen similar data on their side, it's likely. So we then chose them as our kind of preferred Eurovision partner for the following couple of years. It's something we do every year with them now. And it involved us being able to then target users, our user base, based on their likes, their habits, the stuff they're really interested in, if they've engaged with some of our takeaway brands before, all that sort of stuff. And then just keep the brand front of mind with them across the course of the whole day. And I think it resulted in the end with a push notification to people that we, just before the show started as well, to try and really kind of take it over the line to make sure they're thinking about that particular brand. And that was, that's always a nice story, because it's something that, again, we wouldn't necessarily associate with being, I guess, creative storytelling or whatnot, but essentially these events and these scenarios do exist. And we, we're doing, I think, very well now at kind of seeing them and really giving the brands the ability to tap into some of these events.
Yeah, I guess kind of like by anchoring a lot of these campaigns into kind of wider stories that really resonate as far as like the public consciousness and as far as the advertiser consciousness is concerned, can be really interesting.
Yeah.
And I mean, have you witnessed off the back of campaigns like that, client expectations or perceptions change around how they can partner with you thanks to that kind of activity?
Yeah, and I know it's an Avon podcast, but I'm going to blow the trumpet a little bit here. But essentially, it's how unlocking the key for brands to be able to secure more budget to do more creative things, we've certainly seen the benefits of in the last couple of years. And we've run a number of other award-winning campaigns that we've not talked about here, but it has involved the brands almost coming to us like RFP style and saying, we want to pitch you against other publishers, and we want to run we want you to do a creative campaign for us, or pitch for that, access to tenancy budget or exposure budget that we can use to then sort of activate the audience, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gone in and pitched numerous different campaigns, and we've fared very well out of that. And so that whole perception, I think, has sort of changed now, and how brands can do something different and, can sort of break the mold a little bit and just be shown to be creative internally as well.
So if you've got any advice or recommendations for other affiliates that might be listening and are thinking that this might be something that they could try to do, but maybe are unsure about how to go about incorporating that type of strategy into their campaigns, have you got any?
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away. But no, at the same time, I think it's more around understanding. I always say it's always understanding what the brand's looking for, what are the brand's KPIs. I think if you start with that angle, and you know, it's good practice to do that anyway. But I think if you can start with that and understand what it is they're looking to do and achieve over the quarter or the month or over a particular sort of campaign period, and then you can tie that back to, you know, real world events or real world scenarios that's going on, and also then look into how you can get the best out of your own sort of data user base and then make the most of it. And I think that's probably the sort of simple starting point, I'd say, for doing these campaigns.
Yeah. So will you be tuning into Eurovision this year?
I'm going to nod and say yes. but, you know, the interesting thing about Eurovision is that it enables us to work collectively across different markets as well, because it is something that gets a lot of eyeballs. So, I probably will have to, I think, for the sake of for an all-rounding understanding of what's going on, watch it, I suppose.
Work purposes only.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for dropping in to tell us more about your article. And obviously, you can read more about that in the Aaron Report this year. And thanks again for your contribution.
No worries.
Great insights there from all of our contributors to the report. So a big thanks to all of them for coming in today to be interviewed, and also to all those around the world who contributed their own views and perspectives to the report this year. And I hope those discussions have helped give you a little flavour of what to expect from the report and incite you to want to check out more. Remember, you can download a digital copy of the Aaron Report from the Aaron site for free by going to our Market Insights Hub. And we've already had over 1,000 downloads since its launch, which is really great to see. We'll be referencing content from the report over the next few months across our site, newsletters, and social channels, so do keep your eyes peeled for that. And if you have any feedback, then feel free to get in touch with us on our new dedicated podcast email address, awintalks@awin.com. We welcome any and all feedback from our listeners, and if there are any subjects you're keen for us to cover or candidates you'd like us to interview in the future, then do let us know on there. And if you like what you've been hearing from us over the last few months, then please do give us a rating, ideally the 5-star variety, or review on Apple Podcasts, which goes a long way to helping us reach a bigger audience and telling more people about the inner workings of the affiliate industry. And talking of understanding more about the inner workings of the affiliate industry, we've also got news of a couple of Awin conferences coming up.
Yeah, that's right. So you can find details for both of these. Think Tank's already an established event in the US. That's happening again in June, first week of June. In Chicago. You can find details of that on the US website. And then we also have a similarly titled event in the UK. So we're rebranding our annual event to Think Tank. That's happening in London, and that's a week later. So I believe it's on the 30th. No, hold on. It's about the 6th or 7th of June, I think. But again, you can find out more details on our website about both of those. And they're both kind of what we hope to do is bring like a full understanding of the affiliate channel with lots of diverse and interesting speakers. So check out the website if you want to find out more details about both events.
Great. So that's all for this episode. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next month with more discussions, more interviews, and more affiliate insight. So it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Kev.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from Craig.
Goodbye.